Hi, it's Diane, and it is May 21st. I'm here with the Noon Group. So far, we have Rosie and Lauren and Teresa, and it's a busy May day. And so a couple of you have said that you need to be on mute part-time, which is fine. But I would love to start with check-ins and celebrations. Rosie, are you willing to get us started?
Absolutely. Observation, maybe a celebration. This week, what I noticed was we started charting my daughter's moods, and she's got a thermometer now where she goes from, like, she kind of does the zones of regulation. She's 16 years old, and, you know, it goes from kind of green, you know, green, blue, orange, red. And I'm just noticed it this week and noticed the ebb and flow. And that was different because normally I don't stand back. And I just noticed how much she's in the red zone and how it kind of shifts. It just shifts and she gets into it and she gets out of it. And it doesn't seem to be related to anything necessarily externally that I feel like I can control. So that was really good to know that it's not simple cause and effect. Because I think what happens is I end up micromanaging it when really it's the kind of thing that you can't really micromanage.
So what you're noticing is that it's not even like a conscious trigger. So it may be a hormonal trigger or a insider head trigger. So it's less predictable than you suspected it was.
And I think it's longer. Yeah, longer reaching. Like, I mean, you know, something happened at school that's basically a build-up, and I'm getting it at the end of the day and in the whole evening and the next day, but then, you know, 2 days later it shifted.
Mm-hmm.
But she won't let me catch it, but it took 2 days to shift. So that's 2 days where we're basically on not an awful lot of interaction because she's very dysregulated.
So I'm going to go back to the whole won't let her touch it, and we can maybe push there a little bit on what is and isn't okay to talk about, because a lot of times they don't want to talk about what it was that is causing it, but they might be interested or willing to, you know, get some help to calm down or whatever else. But so appreciate that, and appreciate the fact that, oh, what came up for me is that there's a tip sheet we did about homework stress and the fact that a lot of times the signals that we see from these kids, the dysregulation is actually a key indicator that the kid is just under a huge amount of stress and we just don't even realize it. And so that might be, that's a seed I would plant for you, Rosie, before we move into the conversation today.
Mm-hmm.
Lauren, what about you?
So I'm going to celebrate that this isn't so much celebration at first, but we've had a rough couple of weeks. But I feel like I'm a lot more self-aware than I used to be, even if I don't always make the choices that I wish that I had made in hindsight. I feel like mm-hmm. I can look back at the situation and be more aware than I used to be.
Awesome. Love that. And I guess I'm curious how much more are you willing to give yourself grace in those moments where you don't handle it the way you wish you had?
Well, it's funny you mention that because that's what I'm taking aim on today is to not be so hard on myself. And I am struggling with that because I know all of these things. I've been doing Spanish school and CSS, I think, for over a year now. And then I, like, feel like I take 5 steps back, and then I'm really hard on myself about that. So,
yeah. And it's easy to do because you know what you want now. I mean, there's, like, what do they call it, incompetence is, like, where you know what you want to be able to do, and you aren't able to do it, and that... That's where that cycle of shame and guilt and everything else creeps in. So it's great that you're taking aim on how you are handling it when you miss the mark. Is that a fair way to describe it?
Yes.
And is it specifically with regard to when you get triggered, Lauren? Is there some other particular area that you want to narrow in on?
I don't really know. There was a lot that happened in the past couple of weeks, but I feel like I've been working. I've been on the Thursday call most of the time, but I've been working really, really hard on building my relationship with my son, and I feel like I just, like, ruined all of that. And so, long story short, I don't know. Well, I don't know if you want me to tell you now or later the gist of what happened.
So it sounds like whenever you say ruin the relationship forever, the minute that I start to wonder whether catastrophizing shows up, right?
No,
it's a sort of.
Yeah, it wasn't that drastic, but I feel like I worked so hard on it, and then I feel like it just put us like 10 steps back, and that's really frustrating, and I have a hard time like accepting that and being okay with it. So I don't know. There's just been a lot going on in my brain.
Well, so step number one, and I'm going to go here, Lauren, if you'll play with me for a second before we go into the lesson, is to unravel from your own, I'm going to call it a trigger. I'm sure you're not in fight or flight, but you're kind of, it sounds like you're in the emotional part of your brain and you're ruminating and you're wishing you hadn't done it and you're kind of beating yourself up and maybe a little hyper-focused on it. How willing are you to consider that even though you totally screwed it up the other day, whatever it was, that everything can be okay moving forward, either now or soon enough?
Yeah, no, I can definitely appreciate that.
Because
that.
If you're willing to consider that it's true, this is the key, right? So it's like if we're in the middle part of our brain or in the triggered part of our brain, if we're willing to consider that something else might be true or might also be true, we could move back into the problem-solving part of our brain in a different way. Does that resonate?
Yes, it does.
Okay, cool. So you're taking aim on how to handle it when you don't do it the way you wish you did, or how to take it more gentle on yourself. Which language sounds better for you?
I think more gentle on myself. Can I also acknowledge that this 17, 18 years old, like, I have no clue what in the world I am doing. Like, this stuff is hard. I used to feel like, okay, like, get over it and move on. I don't know what I'm doing, really.
Somebody told me once that 17 was the hard. It's like everybody has advice about which is the hardest year. And when somebody told me, no, 17 is the hardest year, I have absolutely felt that one.
Yeah, I just wanted to put that out there that it's hard, but
it is. Yeah, well, and I had to laugh because last night I was in the car with my 19-year-old, and he goes, adulting is hard, Mom. And I was just kind of laughing at him because, he doesn't get to have summer break this year, and it just doesn't feel quite right to him. But so, yeah, he said, yes, buddy, adulting is hard sometimes. So,
really?
Yeah, awesome. Okay, Teresa, are you close enough that you could take yourself off mute and tell us where you want to take aim and celebrate?
Not yet. Within the next 5 to 7 minutes. Yes. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry. I'm going to go back on mute. Okay. Bye.
Rosie, where do you want to take aim?
Remind me. Taking aim is for this week. It's got nothing to do with the topic of the day?
It can have something to do with the topic of the day. It's just really kind of what you're compelled to kind of keep your eye on as we're having the conversation. So it may be something that came up as you were reading today's lesson. It may be something that you've been grappling with for months. It may be something that just popped into your head this week as a new challenge.
Okay.
It's just kind of a frame of reference.
Okay. So I think for me, it's still looking at this whole being in the red zones. How do we kind of, what is that about? And how can we work together so that she can communicate a little bit about that?
So can I challenge you to shift it just slightly?
Okay.
Because getting her to talk about it is actually a strategy. And it may or may not be the most ideal strategy for her. And I know that as a parent, it feels like, oh my gosh, she's got to talk about it or we can't help her. But it sounds like what you really want to do is to help figure out kind of what's in your toolbox for helping her when she gets into the red zone. Is that fair?
Yes.
So I'm going to challenge you to stay there because you may come back and say, yeah, you know what? I got to figure out how to open the door and get her to talk about it. Or there may be something else that pops into your head.
Okay.
Awesome. Cool. Okay, so I'm going to count on Teresa to tell me when she's in a place and pop in and interrupt. But we're going to talk today about focusing on the process and not on the achievement. And this kind of plays in a couple of different directions. So this time of year, it can be just kind of a practical sort of thing. It's a lot of us are focused on getting a certain grade in a class or finishing a test or you know, kind of this sort of end game as we're getting close to the end of the school year. And what this tool is suggesting is that we, instead of focusing on, hey, I want to get an A on this test, you focus on the process of understanding what it takes to study for a test. And so if, for example, I'm going to build on that studying piece of it, but if you have a kid who's got a final exam, instead of, you know, putting a reward or a measurement on, you know, what did they get on the exam, it's about, you know, having them engaged in the process of planning how they'll get ready for the exam and then sticking to their plan. So, for example, well, how many hours do you think you need to study in total for this exam? And when do you want to study? And what do you want to make sure you cover? And kind of really getting them, especially because we've got older kids in this group mostly, you know, getting them involved in creating a plan and rewarding them for participating in the plan. So if they are able to jump in every night and study, or if they are willing to take help when you offer it, or if they ask it, you know, it's that sort of, it's not just about, so I'm taking it a little bit further, but it's about the process of studying in this example rather than the outcome. The other place that this comes up is about the process of collaboration, and we talk about this a lot. And I'm thinking about this, Rosie, with you and the red zone. It's kind of like if you focus on getting her to work with you on solving the problem, get buy-in from her to solve the problem, or get, you know, or get buy-in from her to at least talk about it is what you were suggesting. But it's this sort of, rather than solving the red zone problem, you're focused on working with her to solve the red zone problem. So I've had parents who would put a reward in place for participating in a weekly team meeting or family meeting, or for, you know, coming up with ideas for if you're brainstorming about how to get out of bed in the morning. So the reward would not be for getting out of bed in the morning. The reward or the celebration would be about coming up with ideas or trying something or being in this role of experimentation. Because a lot of times we know this as parents, we get stuck on the outcome, right? It's like sort of, it's all about the grade or it's all about getting up or whatever it is that we ultimately want. And because so much of the work with these kids is about exploration and about trying different things, and it's never, you know, usually the same thing won't work, you know, forever and ever, but it's about teaching us, helping our kids become resilient and to learn how their brain works and to be willing to try different things, and the same thing for us, we want to focus on the process. And so, Lauren, I want to shift to you and say, you know, what would it mean to focus on the process of not beating yourself up rather than the just not beating yourself up?
What is the process of that, though?
Isn't, well, the process of it is maybe the first time is like noticing that, wow, I just beat myself up again. That's pretty normal. And because beating yourself is a normal reaction, right? Beating yourself up is no different than I get triggered. That's a normal reaction. I beat myself up for getting triggered. That's a normal reaction. So part of this is self-awareness. Part of this is, what do I want to try? And I guess the question, so let me back up and ask the question a different way, is how different does it feel if you focus on trying things that will help you to not beat yourself up versus focusing on not beating yourself up?
Yes, that does feel different.
So tell me about what...
Well, I just don't know exactly what kind of tools in the trying to not beat myself up versus... Well, because the beating myself up is so... Then if I do beat myself up, then I'll feel bad about that. So I think that's why the process is helpful.
Well, and it's the same thing with our kids, right? So if they don't know how to solve the problem, if we're focused on making sure you turn in the homework, and they have no idea how to get their brain to remember to turn in the homework, they're going to feel bad if they weren't successful because it's just yes or no, I turned on the homework. I turned in the homework.
Right.
Did I turn it in? Yes. Did I turn it in? No. The goal here is if you focus on the process, it's just sort of, so what did you try? And what are you going to try tomorrow? And it's just kind of that sort of openness and collaboration is where you insert the opportunity in the dialogue. So what's coming up for everybody?
So I've got a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
So is that fairly common? Because what I find is that she's pretty shut down anyway, but she's very shut down with the idea of collaborating or problem solving. Like, we've literally got like 1 or 2 minutes before she shuts down. So when you say parents are rewarding them, are they literally rewarding them like you might reward a younger child?
You could if you know that works. I mean, the reality is that you know that without buy-in and motivation, her ability to participate in that conversation is going to be limited, which is what you're seeing. You know, and so maybe it's a conversation about how to have the conversation. You know,
yeah,
so it's like, I know that having a conversation about this is hard, and we get 2 minutes in and you just shut down. What are you willing to try?
And she'd say, I don't know.
Okay. So then if you focus on the process, so is the goal here that she has an idea, or the goal here is that she's willing to try something?
Okay, got it.
Does that distinction make sense?
Yeah.
So it's
the,
she says, I don't know, and there's an article I wrote called What to Do When Your Kid Says, I Don't Know.
I read that one.
A scaffolding method.
Yeah.
You know, so when she says, I don't know, you say, well, think about it for a minute, and then you brainstorm, and you kind of add in supports and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And if she says, I don't know, the other piece of this, Rosie, is asking permission, you know, and holding them accountable. So it might be, I really want to talk to you about this, and it doesn't have to be now, and I know it's hard for you to talk about it. When are a couple of times that you feel like might work for you, even if we only talk about it for 5 minutes?
Yeah, something happens. I can't even tell you what. Like, we try all those things, and something happens in the moment where it just, invariably, it seems like we get stuck, or she just shuts us down. Like, it seems like we're having a really hard time, despite our best efforts, moving forward. So that, I will try that, definitely. And when you said holding
them
accountable.
Can you reflect for me, what do you notice happens kind of right before she shuts down?
That's really hard. She's shut down right from the beginning. She doesn't even want to be there in the beginning.
Okay. So I wonder if it's a pattern that you guys have when you talk about this, that she's resisting. Does that resonate?
Yes, and partly it's a larger part of, I think, being a teenage girl trying to break away when she can't really, like, she's got a whole bunch of stuff going on. So I think she's trying to get control over her life that she doesn't have a lot of control over. So I get it, and we try and give her lots of space and time, but she's got a real resistance and a real, like, I don't need you, I don't need my parents, my parents are lame, you know, she's all in that. So even trying to get buy-in, you know, collaboration is not her style, right?
So how interested is she in fixing the problem of this whole kind of her ending up in the red zone?
I think she probably, I think she'd probably have given up a bit. I think she probably doesn't feel very successful in fixing it.
So that might be the place to start.
Yeah.
Is the willing to consider, so let's go back to the willing to consider, right? So if she feels like there's nothing I can do, mom is going to be mad at me no matter what. She, you know, she thinks I can fix this and I don't know how to fix it. I'm just kind of over it and I'm, you know, secretly beating myself up and in coping mechanism mode. You know, so it sounds like this, if you're focusing on the process here, the first step in the process is even getting her to be willing to consider that there's a solution here.
Right.
And it might be interesting to just ask her that question.
Right. Right.
What is she, what change does she want to see? You know, does she want you to get off her back? Does she want to be more in control of her emotions? Does she want to not have to feel like she, you know, that sort of thing? It would be interesting.
Yeah. I don't think she wants to have that conversation with us, though. That's too intimate for her, right?
Okay. Does she have other people that she's intimate with?
Yeah, she does. No, not really. But she does go and see a counselor. She could do that with a counselor.
That was always my rule with my kids. You don't have to talk to me, but you have to
talk to someone. Yeah.
And you have to tell me who you're going to talk to. Not so that they'll tell me, but so that I can give you accountability to make sure you talk to them.
Okay. When you
again,
talk
it's
about
the process. The process is having someone to talk to about the situation.
Yeah.
Not about coming to you.
Yeah. And we're not mad at her. I think that we're certainly not mad at her, but I think she's a bit helpless. You know, she doesn't feel very successful in that regard. And she's in such a teen and anxious place that she doesn't see us as a source of help or wanting us as a source of help. It's like, I want to do this, fix this in my own way, right? But where we get stuck is the accountability.
Well, and it's interesting because I've been talking a lot for the last couple of weeks about collaboration and safe ways to collaborate. And, you know, we're coming up on, for many of us, summer break sooner rather than later. But it's this sort of, you know, can you hold them accountable for cooking dinner together with me or baking a cake or planning a fun outing together? Or, you know, it's this sort of thing you want to exercise your muscle of getting them into the mode of collaboration about something neutral, so that you can begin to rebuild those muscles and the relationship in a more fun, relaxed way sometimes.
Okay. Well, I would say she's not interested in collaborating with us, period, because she really just would, you know, she's a boarder in her own house. She'd like to actually be on her own and be getting on with her own life. Thank you very much. You know, she's in that zone.
Well, and that's where the accountability and control balance goes. So I was talking to a mom this morning and talking about the fact that her son is not interested in doing anything with them and, you know, the slight shift in language. Okay, so we're going to do something that's fun as a family together once a week. You get to decide what it is and when it's going to be. And you give them as much control as you can, but you hold them accountable for doing something.
Got it. So when you say holding them accountable, you mean you're actually, that's the piece where it's kind of a bit non-negotiable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Somebody was going to pop in.
Yes, that's, Teresa is in. So in as best I can be in, I ran around the house looking for my notebook, which I can so easily put in a safe place that I can't find. But I'm here. And I'm grateful that I tuned in because it's all so relevant.
Awesome. So can you celebrate on something, Teresa?
Yeah. I mean, really, I almost felt like, I think it was Lauren, I'm not sure, but I almost feel like I can tag on what she said. It sounds like such similar situation. But I feel like I'm taking very, very baby steps, and I'm letting myself know that that's okay. I feel like I'm making very slow progress. But what I think I can celebrate, because I've had a lot of downers too, where I feel like I take two or three steps backwards, is just knowing, recognizing, being aware of those changes in my body when I am triggered, and getting triggered and then reacting to those triggers and working really hard once I am aware and recognize that I'm triggered to shut my mouth and recognize that there's really no urgency, because I often feel the urgency and want to jump in right away. And so I think that I've had a couple of moments where I was able to really bite my tongue and be much more productive in a conversation later on with her. So
awesome.
That's my celebration. Yeah.
And where are you taking aim, Teresa?
Well, I'm actually in the process of taking aim on the process, because again, everything we're talking about is so relevant to what I'm even experiencing. And actually, that's another little bit of a success, I would say, or a celebration, because she is, again, 17 and a half. I would agree, you know, whoever said, I don't know what I'm doing, this is my fifth 17-year-old, and I still don't feel like I know what I'm doing because, again, of the cultural shifts that have taken place. But she's in the middle of, we just had a college graduation recently with another daughter, so things are really crazy. We're about to go on a trip this Sunday, trying to get ready for that. But, and Jacqueline is in the process of taking, she just finished AP exams up last week, and she's taking a very difficult math final tomorrow. And I have been trying so hard to focus on the process, and I've even articulated to her, I just care, Jacqueline, that you practice doing your best and separating yourself from distractions. I don't actually care what grade you get. I just want you to develop those tools of self-control and self-discipline, because those are going to be so important for you in the future. But so I have articulated that to her, but I, you know, you get smacked down in the meantime too, because one of the things she just said to me in the last couple of days, because she's very distracted by the gosh darn cell phone and, you know, just iMessaging friends. And and I know, I mean, I've studied it. I've got a medical background. You know, the more you interrupt yourself, it takes 2 hours to complete what could take a half hour or hour to complete. So really the phone needs to be away. And at some point, you know, I'm giving her more control over doing that herself, but it is so, so hard. And then when I notice that she's not, so when I shared with her my observations, like, she slapped me down and said, Mom, you are the one that is stressing me out. You are making me so anxious. I can see that you're anxious and it's making me anxious. So that was kind of an aha for me, again, in terms of the triggers too, because I think I'm managing my triggers, but if I'm coming across to her, like, not like, like remembering to take those deep breaths, relax my shoulders, just smile and just be poised. You know, I apparently, in my body language, and I guess in my pressure of speech, as you probably can hear, like, I'm realizing that I am creating some of the stress. So that's kind of a little, like, you don't want to beat yourself up, but you feel bad when you realize that what you're doing, you know. And so I am taking aim on the process and not the achievement. I have another older daughter in grad school who just shared with us the great news that she has in grad school a 3.9 average, and she's gotten her master's of science. She's working on her doctoral degree. And I just said, congratulations on all the effort you've put in. I didn't even focus on the A or the GPA. So I'm just trying to train myself, because I'm a bit of an overachiever, and I can easily go to the end.
So hang on a second. So are you open to a question on this?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, sure.
Well, so one of the things I heard you say earlier is that you want her to do her best.
Yes.
So my question is, what do you think she thinks you mean by that?
What do I think that she thinks I mean by that? That's a very good question. And I actually grappled with that, because when I observe the way, for example, she's using her phone, I don't think she's doing her best. But when I challenged her on that, I recognized that she thinks she is doing her best. So then I had the aha of, okay, I have to shift my expectations, because for her, the way she was handling her phone was doing her best. And to me, it wasn't at all. Is that kind of what you're trying to ask me?
Well, I guess that's the thing. It's like when you say do your best, right? So I have a worldview that everybody does their best all the time, period. I mean, that's
you do.
The worldview. I do. And that even if they're missing the mark, even if they're not doing that, that's my personal view of doing your best. Because everybody's at a different level of consciousness in this moment. And I may be completely triggered, but I'm doing the best I can in that triggered state in this moment. And so I think the question is more about what is she hearing from you? You know, does she think that her best is what her sister would have done? Or her best is what you would have done? Or her best is, you know, something she did one time when the moon was full and her eyes were crossed? You know,
no,
it's
you're
sort
exactly
of,
right. You're exactly right.
So,
you know what? You're telling me, which is one of the lights I've had, which is a different way to say what you're saying, is that we always have to assume the best of the other person. And mm-hmm. if I were, and so if I translate that to, I love that worldview, I'm going to really meditate and think about that, because I'm sure what she hears is that's not how I would have done it, and or that's not how Julia, her sister, would have done it. And that's a lot of pressure for her.
So the language that we use that just popped into my head is the, well, what worked, what didn't work, and what do you want to try differently next time? So you're
okay.
Focusing on, you know, learning from, again, it's failing forward, right? We talk about this a lot, and that's
mm-hmm.
part of the process is, If it didn't work the way you planned or the way that you hoped it would, what did work, what didn't work, and how do you move from there?
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that,
okay.
so what language would you adjust in your day-to-day with her?
Well, I guess I would, even if in my heart I didn't really feel this, because it's understanding what you're saying in my head, but not necessarily believing it in my heart yet. But I feel like I would say something like, hey, Jacqueline, I see that you are doing your very best. I'm so proud of you for that. Are there any opportunities that could help you go even further? Or what about something like that? The facts are, because of screen time, I know that she picked up her phone on average 20 times per hour, and that she was on, you know, VSCO and photo an hour of the day, and she's got this big, difficult final. So in my mind, that's not doing her best. But you're saying that the
world
needs
that everyone
does their best.
Well, but so hang on a second.
Okay.
Well, so the question is, are you taking aim on her studying for the final? Are you taking aim on her being off her phone? Are you taking, I mean, I think that that's the piece of it, is that it sounds like you have a standard in your head that you don't have buy-in from her for, or that
yes,
you have a standard in
your
correct. Head and there's not a rule there. And so there's no, you know, buy-in for changing her behavior. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how, it sounds like you have a perspective of how much her phone use is impacting her ability to study.
Not just her final, her life. Her
okay.
life.
And how aware is she
like,
that it's a problem at all?
In her mind, she is way using her phone less than her peers, and so it's not a problem for her. And she's probably right. I have a very different view of the opportunity to be bored so that you can be creative, so that you can be with your family, so that you can develop your talents and hobbies, And if you just let your kids be on their phone when they're not eating dinner and not studying and not sleeping, then that's not a really good habit to develop for succeeding in college or in life. And she doesn't buy into that at this point, but I'm older and wiser. I'm pretty confident I'm right on that. And so when you're 17 and a half and you're close to going to college and you will not have the degree of, you know, and I am trying to, and I tell her this, as you earn my trust and you show me that you're doing your best to focus on the things that are important, then I'm going to let, you know, because her phone's in my room every night. She has limits on her social media, although she's figured out how to get around them and things like that. And, you know, and again, I have four older daughters, but they didn't have the same kind of technology. She has this beautiful ADD brain, but when you put cotton candy in front of her in the form of this direct connection to her friends, that's the only place she wants to be. And she's very interested in boys, and so that makes it harder. I think if she weren't, she's so, very pretty, and so she attracts.
So hang on a second. I want to interrupt you because I want to keep us focused on this. But so, you know, the reality is, as parents, we have three choices. We can direct. I mean, we talk about the four levels of parenting, right? So we can direct. We can tell them what they're going to do. We can put boundaries in place. You won't use your computer. It's going to be, you know, and you can do that sort of I'm in control of your computer and be strict about it. You can let them do whatever they want to do or what they're going to do and kind of be more allowing. Or you can collaborate with them to set rules and boundaries that work and meet goals. And so I'm going to challenge you to focus on what you want and not on what you don't want. And so if you want more time as a family, focus on the process and create the incentive for her to participate in the family without the electronics. So maybe that there's a family rule that, you know, at the dinner table, everybody's phone goes in a drawer in the kitchen or something, you know, so you're all spending time together as a family, or you have time once a week together where you're doing something fun. You know, you want to focus on what you want, which is time together as a family, and not on how do I get her off the computer or off the phone. Does that resonate?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. So when I go back to the whole group and say, what kind of comes up is this on this idea of focusing on the process, what makes it hard, what makes it easier, those sorts of things.
This is Lauren. I feel like a million things have come up for me. I can relate to pretty much everything Rosie and Teresa have both said. I don't know if this is as much addressing the process, but one kind of overall challenge I'm having with what you guys talked about is and I really can relate so much to what both of you have talked about. But when we talk about things, like in talking about the process, I guess, so on Mother's Day, for example, my son was on his phone a lot, and it's his biggest challenge, I would say, is that he procrastinates and then doesn't have time to do things with our family or to do other things because he's procrastinated. And so if I tell him that, then he's like, well, I can't do anything right. So that's been a challenge, especially as he's gotten older, is that when I feel like when we talk about things, it's just, you know, well, he can't do anything right. And then I find that I'm just in general frustrated with him, and even though I do completely agree with having the worldview that everybody's doing their best, I feel like I'm getting increasingly frustrated with him because I don't know if he's just trying to separate and assert his independence, but I feel like I'm more frustrated with him than not.
And you know what?
Obviously sense that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
so,
this is. Oh. I was just going to say something. Like it seems like what everybody's saying is that you're wanting to parent in a collaborative way, but the kids, in a way, mm-hmm. are needing that earlier strategy. So how do you create that earlier strategy without being too didactic?
No, and thank you for saying that, Rosie. This is part of what we've been talking about, is that sort of we can really see what level one looks like. We can see what level four looks like. It's the scaffolding in between, you know. So it's that sort of how do you, you know, you they say I've got it, and then you've got to figure out how to let them have enough of it, but hold them accountable if for check-ins, you know, or those sorts of things. And so again, it's a process. So how do you hold them accountable for collaboration and troubleshooting, and not make it about, well, you said you were going to do it, you didn't do it, or you did do it.
And this is just a simple example, but I think it really illustrates my point. We had a friend who was going to help our son study a little bit for the SATs, and I'm like, I don't even care if you take the SAT again. He's taken it once. If he doesn't want to take it again, that's fine, but if he's going to work with this person, I don't want him to waste his time. So I was like, so you need to at least, you know, look at the ACT, like to familiarize yourself with it. So I asked him to prioritize. And if he was going to, if he wanted to talk to this guy, that's fine, but he needed to make it a priority. So he was irritated about that. So he's sitting on the couch doing that. My husband and I come home from Lowe's, and my husband's like, why is there water pouring out of the kitchen light from the second floor bathtub? So we're trying to figure that out, and he's still sitting on the couch. Like, my daughter goes and gets towels. We're trying to figure out if there's any water running. And we were like, can you help us? And he's like, I'm working on the SAT. That's my priority. And then I feel like, really? Like, I feel like he just does stuff like that, and then it irritates me. Then I feel like he's a jerk. And then I'm just frustrated in general with him. And it's hard
to hang on
a second. To his positive places.
Right. So it makes perfect sense, and your reaction is normal. And how much is your reaction getting in the way?
Getting in the way of problem solving?
Mm-hmm.
A lot, because I feel like I'm mostly triggered and not problem.
So what's the trigger? So what's the language in your head? He's such a jerk. He's never going to change.
Yeah.
What specifically are you saying?
Yeah, that he's just like a narcissistic jerk.
Okay.
Right now.
And it makes sense that it would feel that way. The question is, when you think he's a jerk, how willing are you or able are you to problem solve?
Yeah, not very.
So you got to come up with a phrase that you're willing to consider is true. We're not talking about being Pollyanna here and going all the way to the positive. So it may be something like, wow, he's really having a hard time communicating respectfully right now. I wonder what's going on.
I feel like that's so hard, though, to go back and be positive. Like lately, especially, I've been having a hard time finding positive ways to be positive. And then he feels that, and it's just a cycle, and I get that.
So what is it that makes it hard to be positive? You're still triggered?
I think he's
or
a jerk lately.
Yeah. Well, and he is. I mean, I think that that's the piece of it, is that when we're coming up with a new thought, we don't try to brainwash ourselves into thinking it's not true, because our kids are being jerks sometimes. And we know that when you see them as a jerk, it's hard to focus on helping them to change their behavior, which is ultimately what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I feel stuck in that place right now.
Okay. So how do you honor the part of you that thinks he's being a jerk and focus on shifting yourself back into problem-solving mode?
I don't know.
Well, think about it for a minute.
Well, I need to get out of the place of being triggered, for one.
Right. Okay. So what are you willing – so in that moment when he's being a jerk, what are you willing to consider is also true that might help you to calm down. Even though he's being a jerk right now, I'm willing to consider
that he's not a jerk, or that he has a lot going on, or that he's
he's not doing it on purpose, or he won't be a jerk forever.
Yeah.
But, mm-hmm. So what do you want to land on one or two that feel solid for you?
Maybe that he's really a good kid.
Even though he's being a jerk right now, he really is a good kid. He's just having a hard time. How does that feel?
I'm okay with that because he is when he's not being a jerk.
So he's a good kid when he's not being a jerk. The question is, so you've got two things that are happening. This is a kid who's a jerk and you have a kid that's a good kid. If you know he's both of those things, does it help you to change your trigger, or does it on and off?
I think it does. I think lately there's just been so many, I think he's probably overwhelmed with school and a lot of his friends are graduating. He's still a junior. A lot of his friends are, like, there's just a lot going on with him, and then there's just been all these different, he wanted to spend the night at his friend's house, their parents were out of town, he did spend the night there. Like, there's just been a lot of those little things going on that have caused conflict lately. And especially when I'm in that place of thinking he's a jerk, they're much more likely to cause conflicts.
So what's the most important thing when you're in this really stressful time for you?
Probably to see him as a good kid and not a jerk, and to be kind to myself.
A lot of times when our kids are jerks, it's because they're stressed out and they're implementing coping mechanisms. They're like, they don't know what else to do. They're struggling. So, okay, let me bring it back out to the group here for a minute.
Okay.
What's coming up?
You mean for the rest of us?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, I've got lots of ahas, and I think I'm going to really look at focusing on kind of that, like you said, that process of collaboration, just even beginning, just opening that. I think I've been trying to go for collaboration, and I need to work upstream of that and focus on coming to the table to collaborate. You know, like not being able to successfully do it, but being able to be open to it, right?
Yeah, and it's the step before the step before the step.
Yeah.
And if your kid is pushing back for all of us, they want more control. So the question becomes, the problem we want to solve is, how do I give my child more control and hold them accountable? Because you want to do both.
Yeah.
So let's move into wrap up. Rosie, you already have kind of started us there, but
yeah.
I'm on page 55 of the workbook.
Yeah.
So what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or takeaway? What's an aha that I had? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success? So jot down some notes for yourself, and I would love to hear from everyone at least an aha and an action item.
Well, for me, the realistic action step is to work with Leah's counselor on maybe helping her to identify how she might get from red to yellow, like a thought or an action step that she can take That's okay. Accountable piece. And for me, I'm just going to continue. I'm going to try that. I'm going to continue to try that kind of lightly saying kind of, you know, what worked, what didn't work. And what's one thing we can try differently?
Love that. Who else?
So this is Teresa. I think the aha was your worldview of everyone does their best all the time, because I will readily admit that a lot of the time I don't think she is doing her best. And so for me to really kind of think about that and what that means for her, I think will really help reduce the tension. You know, speaking about the accountability, I just want to say, you know, the other day as we were working through the process of how to do your best to studying for your math final, I was proposing some accountability measures, and she came back at me and said, "What? You don't believe me when I say I'm gonna do this, this, and this?" And you know, I tried to explain that, you know, a math teacher doesn't say, "Did you learn all your calculus?" They actually give you a test, and that being held accountable is part of life. And so, but anyway, so.
So hang on a second. I'm gonna challenge you, Teresa, on this one, because I think that this is something that you play with over time, and you want to give your kids an opportunity to try it on their own, and say, "Awesome, great. You want to do it? You want me to trust you? That's great. And it's my job to have your back. So when do you want to check in? You know, do we do? And it may not be that you can. You're at the end of the school year, right? So. My deal with my kids is always they get the first quarter, you know, each quarter I scaffold, and they know that word. It's like I scaffold a little bit more in the second quarter, and I scaffold a little bit more in the third quarter, and I scaffold a little bit more in the fourth quarter. But we have check-ins, and my job is to hold them accountable to check in and to help them identify when they need more help.
I like that, yeah. And in fact, like, I kind of told myself here at the end of junior year, okay, I'm just going to try to get her through the last, like tomorrow is the last final. I'm just going to try to get her through this as collaboratively as possible. And then to really like work, as you say, on it. One is easy to understand, stage one, stage four, but that scaffolding in between, because here we are heading into her senior year. And so, I had a thought about, you said focus on what you want and not what you don't want, and what are you going to take aim on? And then it quickly came into my head and it quickly left my head. You know, I mean, we already do so much of what you said in terms of the phone. I mean, the phone is never at the dinner table. The phone, she doesn't even really use it in the car, because I tell her that's our opportunity to talk. Even if we don't talk, it's an opportunity. And if you're on your phone, then that won't happen, and things like that. But so I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to take aim on, because it really does, for us, one of the biggest triggers for us is the phone, and using it more as a tool and not as something to just waste time in. That really triggers me when she's just wasting time on it. But for her, she thinks that's a stress relief for her. But in fact, I see her getting more anxious when she spends more time on her phone.
So how do you highlight for her what you see and give her control?
Well, I've tried to highlight what I see, because there's plenty of resources outside of mom, because even if she doesn't want to believe mom, there's plenty of literature out there and experiences out there, even real life vignettes of kids that have grown in anxiety and depression. And I try to share these real life things with her, but in her little 17-year-old brain, like, she's wanting to reject what she probably knows deep in her heart is true. And I know she knows. I know she recognizes that. I've even overheard.
So hang on a second. So
her,
what she's trying to do is to get some more control in her life, right? And so she's going all the way to rejecting mom's perspective. So you want to give her more control. And so that's the area of focus. Does that resonate?
Okay. Yes, it does.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool. All right. Who did I miss?
This is Lauren.
Go for it.
So I'm going to focus on him being a good kid more than him being a jerk. And I also thought that it would be helpful to ask him if he's been really stressed lately, because I think I've been taking that personally, kind of the way he's been acting. So I think it's probably worth talking about that if he recognizes that he has been stressed, and maybe he will say no, but I think it's just probably worth talking about.
Yeah. Well, and there's that tip sheet. I don't know. I can put that in there. It's the 10 tips your kid is struggling with homework stress. If you guys, is that resonating with you guys? I can put the link out on the Facebook group if it would be helpful.
Sure, put it out.
Cool. Awesome. All right. Thank you, ladies. Great call today. We next week is almost June. Can you believe it? Let me look at the schedule here real quick and let you know. Next week, we're having an office hour call on Friday, the 31st, at noon Eastern. And then the week of June 4th is a PSS group. So we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye-bye.